Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Muddy Knees Media.
The heating's on, it's getting darker earlier and earlier, so why not cheer yourself up this November with a subscription to The Athletic for just £1 a week. For only 100 of your English pence every 7 days, you'll get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts. Sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Hello and welcome to a very special episode of the Totally Football Show. Today we're discussing the forthcoming documentary Finding Jack Charlton, which chronicles the life and extraordinary career of the World Cup winner and former Republic of Ireland manager. The film details the most successful period in Irish football history. February will mark 35 years since Jack took the job as boss of the Republic of Ireland national team.
The nation holds its breath. Yes, we're there! To the quarterfinals of the World Cup.
I'm Matt Davis Adams. Joining me are journalist and lifelong Republic of Ireland supporter Dion Fanning. Hi, Dion.
Hey, how's it going?
Very well, thank you. And I'm pleased to say we're joined by the former Republic of Ireland captain, Andy Townsend. Andy, thanks so much for being with us.
No problem, Matt. Good to be here.
The film available then for pre-order now ahead of its release on the 23rd of November. It's a magnificent piece of work directed by Gabriel Clark, executive produced by your good self. How did you come to be involved with the project?
Well, basically, it was about approaching probably 3 years ago now, Gabriel and Pete Thomas, two guys I know very well, obviously from their days at ITV and from my days working with them. So I've known those guys a long time. And they approached me and said, look, we're thinking of doing a big Jack story, a story of Jack's life, his winning the World Cup, obviously the relationship with his brother, and then all wrapped around the kind of journey with the Irish team and what that meant for Ireland as a country at that time, et cetera, you know. And obviously I liked the sound of it, and I knew Gabriel, again, working with him for as long as I had, I knew that he was always going to throw himself at it. He usually does. Everything that he does is, he's not half-hearted. He really does commit onto a serious level. So basically, it was then a case of putting him together with the family. I took him up to see Jack's wife, Pat, and John. That was just under 3 years ago. And literally from that moment onwards, you know, the guys had been filming Jack quite a lot at his home, at various events. And then the rest of it, my involvement was really contacts, timelines, kind of just giving them the background of Jack's personality, the kind of man he was, and then sort of just steering them in various directions. And look, no credit for the amazing film that you've seen. It was totally constructed and put together by those guys. And I think it's a triumph. I think it's a brilliant piece of work. I really do. I'm very proud to be associated with it.
Yeah, I bet you are. It's also particularly poignant, isn't it, following Jack's passing, but also the diagnosis of Bobby with dementia. What was your take on the relationship between them? Did Jack talk much about his brother? Was he ever around the Irish camp when you were involved?
He was occasionally, I think, working in television, Bobby, when we were in the World Cup in 90, maybe in 94 too, but only very occasionally was he in our camp, really, around us guys. And I think we were all aware that Bobby and Jack were very different characters. You know, they were very different men. So I don't think there was, you know, Jack has gone on record many times over the years, Matt, about his relationship with his brother. But don't doubt the love and the respect that they had for each other. Many times I've spoken to Jack lots of times about various players, and it might be a midfield player that I was speaking about who we were playing against, or I might say so-and-so when we're playing them next week, Jack, or next month, he's good. I'll tell you what, I really like it. And he would often comment, and he'd often say he's not as good as our kid. He'd often say that, just that, you know, couldn't do what our kid could do. You know, that sort of thing. So I think people have often felt that, you know, there was a genuine dislike amongst them. That's not fair. I don't think that would be fair to say that. But like many siblings, you know, their life isn't always straightforward, and they've had one or two moments. But certainly the respect he had for his brother, certainly as a footballer, was often apparent.
If we spin forward then to when Jack takes the job as manager of the Republic of Ireland, it feels like one of his first jobs was kind of removing this inferiority complex that had built up around the Irish football team in the years before he got there.
I think that, again, the team had been close in a few tournaments, and there was there'd always been a healthy talent pool. There'd always been some very, very good players in the Irish squads. And he actually says it in the film, doesn't he? You know, Des Casey, who was the president, says that he said to him down the phone, if I can't qualify with that lot, you know, then something's wrong. And I think he would have genuinely meant that. But probably what needed to happen was for somebody to take the squad down a particular road. And that's what Jack was always going to be good at. It might not be a road that everyone agreed with. It might not be a road that always won him respect and admirers, but it was his road, and it was his team. And this is what we're going to do, lads. And if you want to be part of it with me, then you've got to be prepared to do this. If you don't, that's fine. Pack your bag and clear off, you know, and kind of that's the way he was. And that was often loud and clear, really. Certainly from when I first started playing, I made my debut in 89, and I felt that straight away. By that time, Jack had already now got his feet under the table in the job. He'd already had the success of Euro 88. So he was already now travelling in the direction that he really wanted the team to move in. So anyone coming into the squad like me at that time was always just going to buy into what he said. This is the way we're going to do it. It may have been a little bit difficult for some of the other guys years before, you know, when he first joined up in 86, a couple of years before. They might have frowned at one or two of the ideas and one or two of his football philosophies, but certainly I didn't, because, as I say, by that time, the Irish team, the Green Machine, as we called it, was on the move, you know, and it was well and truly up and running.
Andy, like you talk about that, I was wondering, you know, if one of the differences between what came before and when you came in was just that sense of players before Jack having a kind of a more of an input. Like, you touch upon it in the film too, that like that wasn't something that Jack had much time for. Whereas before Jack, and it was probably a failing ultimately, there was probably a canvas of opinions about, you know, what style of play Ireland should be playing, what they should be doing. And that was one of the clarity was something that was imposed by Jack.
That's exactly what I mean, Dion. That's it. You've hit it in one there. That's exactly it. If you think, you know, the modern day players, so players of today, when coaches coach players of today, they coach with a question, you know. Where would you be here, Andy, in this scenario? Where would you want to be in this scenario? Where would you, you know, Jack was, get over there and stay there and don't move from there. Stay there. I don't want you anywhere else but there, you know. And I think that because we had players of genuine world class prior to Jack and during Jack's early period with Liam, with Dave O'Leary, with Frank in particular, those three were outstanding players. We also had a lot of other very good players. But someone has to come in at some point, Dean, and lay down some laws, and someone has to turn around and take a team in a certain direction. And I think that maybe prior to Jack, nobody had really been brave enough to do that. I don't think anyone had really been capable of doing that. So it needed someone who was adamant, someone who was opinionated, someone who was bloody-minded, someone who could be difficult, but someone who also had been there. And of course, with Jack being a World Cup winner, whatever anyone said about the way that he played or the way that he did it, when you've got that experience or the experience of winning a World Cup in your back pocket, then people have to listen. People at some point have to listen. And that's what began to happen, I think.
Was that something that he would often bring up if there was resistance in those early days? Because it's the ultimate trump card, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Matt, you know, he never hardly mentioned it. He never, ever, ever really mentioned it. He very, very rarely related to what he had achieved with anything that we were trying to do. He was unique, and it needed someone like that, I think, Matt, at that time. It did need someone to steer the ship into a definite area. You know, Liverpool for 30 years have been trying to win this league, the Premier League, and all of a sudden you've got a man in charge who kind of you feel that he's walked through the door, and even though it's taken him a couple of years, he's kind of got everybody pulling and coming with him. And I think that's sort of similar with Jack. You know, it took a while, but eventually once he had the squad and he had everybody believing in what he was, once people saw it starting to work, then obviously the country bought into it as well.
Yeah, it did take a while, though, as you say. You know, we see the Go Home Union Jack flag in the film, and obviously a large proportion of that squad were either born in England or you know, had some sort of English identity, including yourself. Were you immediately welcomed and integrated into the squad? I'm talking about amongst your fellow players rather than supporters.
Oh, gosh, no. I mean, listen, and don't forget, at that time, I was, you know, you're playing against everybody every week. Every other week, you know, you're coming up again. So I knew everybody intimately anyway. And I was at Norwich when I first got asked to join up. And Jack said to me, and when the first time I met him, I shook his hand. And he just said, listen, he said, we go about what we do a bit different to a lot of others. But if you do as you're told and get on with it, you'll enjoy it. And that's literally all he said to me when I first met him. The Norwich City team bus was just about to go back to Carrow Road from where I think we were at Millwall in South London. And he came down and watched the game. And he said that to me, and that was all he said.
People say that we show an enthusiasm in our game that England don't have. Maybe it's because we know what we're doing.
Andy, like, I wonder about that, because it's one of the kind of topics in the film, what Jack did in terms of, you know, Ireland, and, you know, there's a lot of reference to the fact that he was an Englishman. Now, in the film, I hadn't aware of the first person, Charlie Haughey, who turned out to be a crook, refers to Jack as an honorary Irishman. Now, I always felt it was more important that Jack was an Englishman, and he never abandoned that. Like, that was a key thing. Like, it was very proud. You can see it in the film how proud he was of how Ireland took to him and loved him. But he wasn't an honorary Irishman. He was an Englishman. And that was kind of more important in the relationship between Ireland and England than if he was saying, I'm now an Irishman. He always was still very much an Englishman.
He was always very much very much an Englishman. But whenever we played England, Dion, whenever he was asked about, as you saw in the film, you know, when he was asked about, would you fancy playing England? Yeah, I would. Yeah, obviously he was, and again, I never asked him, but clearly, and speaking with Jack's son, John, you know, he was annoyed. I wouldn't say upset, but he was annoyed at not getting a response to when he applied, you know, for the England job, to not even get a response. I think that would have annoyed Jack, you know, as a World Cup winner. The least you could have expected was a phone call saying, look, Jack, we're going to go down another road. Fine, whatever, you know, and he would have been cool with that. But to not even get an acknowledgement would have pissed him off. There's no question about that. He wouldn't have liked that. But I wouldn't say that was the reason for, you know, it wasn't the ultimate stimulant in trying to beat England every time as a result, as a consequence of that. I don't think that would be fair. I just think he threw himself at the job when he got it, and you know, he's a determined man. He's a pretty determined sort of character, Jack. You know, not an easy man to persuade or to change. So when he took the job on, he would have wanted to make a success of it, and nothing, whether it's England or anything, nothing would have sort of stood in his way in order to try and do that.
At Paddy Power, we know competition for the remote control can be fierce at the weekends. So, in order to give the non-football-loving occupants of your house something to do, here are some of our top suggestions. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Walk to the shops. Go cycling. Cycle the dog. Recycle the dog. Just go! All very good options, we say, and that's not the only one. If one leg of your 4+-fold acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg, online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
If you're not yet a subscriber to The Athletic, take out a 30-day trial to see their unrivaled coverage of each and every Premier League club by heading to theathletic.com/totally.
Something else that comes up across as a theme in the film is the issue of the peace process, something Niall Quinn speaks about a lot. I wonder if that was something that actually Jack made you aware of, as you know, that you could have a very minor role, I guess, in this kind of thing. But you know, the sense of patriotism, the taking the flag back from the IRA, that kind of thing. Was that something that ever permeated to you as players, or is that just a byproduct?
Nothing at all. Never that. Jack was, you know, again, not a political animal, not motivated by anything outside of the dressing room, or really, he would have been very aware of his responsibilities as the national team manager, you know, and aware of once that real swell of appreciation started for him and for the team, aware of the good that could also bring the country very much.
Yeah, I think looking at it from the Ireland's view, looking back on it, and even at the time, like, and you see it there, what Jack did was help make a journey, like from sort of from nationalism in Ireland, the Irish team allowed us to make this journey into sort of patriotism, rather than defining ourselves by kind of anti-Englishness or anything like that. This was a patriotic expression of pride in the country, rather than saying we don't like another country.
It worries me what the reception would be like if we actually won something.
And I even think in the film, I think Niall, as maybe as his want, he probably pushes it a little bit too far to give Jack credit for the peace process. But I think what it allowed, because even Roddy Doyle says we were able to love an Englishman somehow, or a line like that. I think Irish people always did like huge amounts to do with England, as well as having this other side to the relationship. But like, you know, and that was what was great about the team, because the team was not just people born in Ireland, people whose families had left Ireland and made their lives in England. And maybe lots of them pined for Ireland, but lots of those families grew to love living in England too.
I think there's something in an Englishman at that time wanting to become, because that wasn't a, you know, 1986 was a difficult period for both England and Ireland. And so for him to want to come and be the national team manager at that time, I think also gave him a lot of credit for, or he gained a lot of credit for that, I think, from people who often, you know, and we take football fans for granted. We take, you know, when we talk about a country in supporting a football team, we assume that people don't think about it that much. They're just chuffed to hear that the team's doing well, and it's a great wave to ride along on. But I think it's also very much a case that people started to appreciate the fact that he came at a difficult moment, and he very quickly integrated himself with the team. And let's be fair, you know, at one point he had the country pretty much eating out the palm of his hand. He couldn't do any wrong. Everything he did, and whether that was holding court with the press, I don't want him in here, get him out like he did with Dumfries in 1990.
I am entitled as an individual to speak to who I want to speak to. And I don't want to talk to him.
You couldn't possibly get away with that sort of stuff unless you realised that you were, one, popular, and two, you were backed and you were well supported. And I think, so I do think that people started to recognise the fact that this guy came across at a difficult moment and wanted to become our national team manager. And not only did that for his own professional reasons and financial reasons, whatever, but actually made a fist of it too.
But do you think people loved him too because they knew that he would be that way even if he wasn't getting backed? Like, that was how he was going to be.
Well, and again, I think once they started to see scratch the surface dealing with Jack, you know, you start to see a guy, it's very difficult not to like him. Not necessarily as a player, because when you're working with someone, obviously not everybody likes the manager, not everybody loved him. I think very few of our squads didn't like Jack. Not everybody loved him. Not everybody really, really, really appreciated everything he did. And that's very natural.
Did players sit around bitching about him? Like,
very, very rarely would you hear players bitching about him. Very, very rarely. Of course, look, occasionally you'd be doing something, you go, what are we doing? You know, that's kind of everyday office talk, and that's everyday existence. You know, you're always gonna have moments where you're not sure. As I said in the film, I knocked on his door a few times to speak about a few things, and I was very quickly sort of told in no uncertain terms, thanks, but no thanks. You know, I'm not really interested in what you've got to say. You know, we're going to do it my way, and if it works, great. If it don't, ta-da. You know, and it's kind of that's the way he was. And actually, as well, you know, I've witnessed working in football. I've witnessed so many managers that when I hear them speak, they confuse me in 2 minutes. I ain't got a clue what sort of team they're wanting to build or what they're trying to do. When I hear them speak after a match with Big Jack, it was kind of always loud and clear. You know. And it was do it my way, and this is the way to go, and I'll get you. I won't get you necessarily the very top of the tree, but I'll get you relative success, and everybody along the way is gonna enjoy it. And he delivered on that.
I really like the line of yours in the film, Andy, where you say, "Be a dictator, but a nice dictator." It's obviously a style that you appreciated. It's not actually in the film, but I love the story of the way he told you that you were going to be taking over as captain of the team.
Yeah.
Can you just retell us that one?
Yeah. We were actually out on the pitch warming up, and so he said, "Andy, like, call me over," because he often used to, when we were warming up, he often used to sort of walk out there. And he used to get a big roar off the crowd. And I think he used to do it for that reason, mainly. He used to walk out there. And the crowd used to go mad when he walked out onto the field, and he'd give him a wave, you know. And he called me over and he said, "Look, I want you to be captain from now on." And I sort of said, "Right, okay." And he went, "Right, don't overthink it. Don't think about it too much. Just do it. If you're no good at it, I'll take it away from you." And then he walked off and went to say something to someone else, you know, as we were warming up during the game. But it wasn't like he knocked on my door, you know, the night before the game to say, "I'm thinking of making you the skipper. What do you feel? How do you feel?" And again, that's very much Jack's style, you know, very much the way he was as an individual. It's no great shakes. All it meant for me was, really, I don't want you to change anything you do other than that you'll probably walk out first. And we stick an armband on your shoulder. You know, don't let it change anything else in the way that you go about your business and the way that you play for me. I don't want it to change anything else. But that was the way it was. Literally just sort of told me there, get on with it. And, you know, that was it.
Was he that direct with Paul McGrath? He's a figure who is obviously an important one in this team, but somebody who's quite central in the film as well. I just wonder whether Jack needed to use that arm around the shoulder style a little bit more with somebody like Paul, who obviously had his own problems to deal with that were different from the rest of you.
Yeah, he certainly cared about Paul. He worried about Paul.
Because like I've said to him many times, people in football will look after you. It's in their interest to look after you. When it's not in their interest, they won't.
Well, it's very, very true that. So he had concerns for Paul because he knew that Paul's problems weren't. Paul wasn't a party boy that, you know, broke curfews and sneaked out of the hotel because he wanted to go to a nightclub, you know, in the middle of Dublin. Paul got into situations because of his problem with alcohol, and Jack recognize that, and loyalty was always a big thing for him, Matt. Loyalty was one of the words that we've seen on the notes, one of the words that he'd written down. And loyalty in Jack's world, I think, was very much a two-way street, very much. People that turned up and did well for him and played well for him and gave everything for him, he would be loyal to. He would have found that very, very difficult to have been anything other than supportive and very mindful of Paul's situation. And of course, as Paul says in the film himself, once or twice, it got very close to the line that you can't cross with Jack, because there was always a line with him on most things that he wouldn't do, or you feel like you're pushing your luck a little bit. And I think Paul kind of indicates in the film that there were a few times when he'd almost gone a little bit too far. But again, the understanding that Jack had of Paul's problem, how much he loved him as a player, of course, how much he respected him as a... Because like everybody, we all know, despite Paul's problems, he's got a heart of gold. And I think Jack recognised all of that, which was one of the big reasons why he stood by him.
You talk about a couple of times you came close to crossing the line. There's that scene in the film for the Turkey game.
Yeah.
When Paul didn't get off the bus. And I was actually there that day. I remember watching the coach coming in, seeing all that happen in real time, and Jack getting off the whole squad getting off the coach, and then realizing that Paul was still on the coach.
It's just that I'm getting the DTs. Something that happens with alcoholics. Your brain's not functioning right. Jack said, if you don't get off the bus today, you'll never play for this country again. And I said, yeah, Jack, I understand that. I do understand it. I just couldn't get off the bus.
Because Paul's kit, I remember Paul's kit with his boots was still all in a neat pile, whereas everyone else's, we'd all been taking our tracksuits off, putting our training, putting our kit on, putting our shorts on, putting our boots on. And I remember seeing Paul's kit in a, you know, and we went out for the warm-up that day. And when over the tannoy, the teams were being announced, and it was like, you know, number five, Paul McGrath. And obviously a big roar went up, as it always did. So that was obviously, you know, a really difficult time for Paul, because I'd seen Paul over the years in club football where, you know, he might have had a couple of days where he'd been suffering and struggling a little bit, but he would always get himself out there. He would always get himself out there to play. I've seen, you know, from Monday to Friday, you didn't quite see much of Paul because he would be training in the gym or doing his own thing. But he was always had that amazing ability to get out there and play. So for him that day to not be able to do it, he must have really, really been suffering that day. But that was, you know, that was one instance. Now we won the game, Dion. I think we won the game 4-5.
5-0, yeah.
Yeah, we won 5-0. So again, you know, that helps in a situation like that we were able to cope and therefore that takes the pressure off everybody all round. But that was one instance which was a difficult time for Paul. But there was no way that Jack was ever going to cast him aside. No way, because he recognised and he knew that not only was McGrath an exceptional player, he knew that he needed some help. He knew that actually needed the support and the help of his manager to kind of get through it, and that's what he did.
He understood that I loved him, Anytime he put me on a football pitch and I was in any way healthy, I'd be playing for him as much as anyone.
I think Declan Lynch says in the film that he embodied the kind of Paul sort of the dysfunction of Ireland was kind of embodied in Paul's like story, and the fact that he was a rare thing in any sport, in any world, that he was loved by like all the time, as if, you know, the way people towards the end of their career, people become beloved and they become. Paul was always held with that affection.
He was.
By people. And it's funny, just to bookend the coach story, I remember a couple of years later being there early at Lands End Road for another Ireland game, and Paul had just won the PFA Player of the Year award, and he got off the Ireland coach and he was applauded into the dressing room by all the fans who were there because he had won that. And there was genuine, and there is genuine love for him.
Definitely. Always. And Jack wasn't different with Paul. Ron Atkinson had him as a young boy at Manchester United and had exactly the same experiences with him at Aston Villa. I remember when Brian Little first came to Villa and he didn't play Paul. Paul didn't play for a few games, and it was like, you know, Paul had been Villa's player of the year like 5 years on the trot. You know, he was absolutely adored by everyone at Villa. And when Brian came, you know, again, he would have probably had his own reasons for not playing him. Maybe he was testing him. Maybe he was just seeing what sort of reaction he was going to get. But very soon, McGrath became an integral part of Brian Little's team too, you know.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep. You heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Earlier, Andy, you mentioned Eamon Dunphy. Obviously, he was a big critic of the style of football that Ireland were playing at the time. It's funny, you look at how cyclical the game is and now how pressing and kind of being direct and on the front foot is such a big part of football. I wonder, at the time, did you players feel stung by that criticism? Did it even matter? And now, do you think that it's a big part of Jack Charlton's legacy as a coach?
Sure. Well, at the time, We only ever used to hear about, because don't forget, in that period, Jack had very few detractors, very few really. And so we didn't really ever get to hear of anything. We heard about that one in 1990 after the Egypt game. We heard about that. And you know what? When I look back, we were poor that day. We were very poor that day. Jack's style, Matt, when it worked, when we were at our best with it, we were... And I'm not just saying this, I wouldn't say this lightly, but we were as hard a team to beat as probably anywhere. I mean that quite genuinely. You know, when we did it well, there were very, very few teams I felt that we couldn't beat. Very, very few. When we did it poorly, when the intensity wasn't quite there, and when very hot occasions we used to suffer, because when you've got a real pressing running game in those stifling conditions, it can be difficult. So there was more than one occasion when we played, and it was very ordinary. It could be quite ordinary. It could look a little bit archaic at times. There's no question about that. But never once did we ever come off the field to hear Jack saying, I'm going to change it, I'm going to do this, and I think next time we'll do this or we'll do that. Never. It was get back on the horse and do the same again, you know, as simple as that. And so the Dunphy criticism really... It annoyed Jack, I think. I think it annoyed him at the time. But I don't think it really stung him. I don't think it really, really hurt him. I think it just crawled under his skin a little bit for a while. And again, being the kind of obstinate, as I mentioned, bloody-minded individual that he was, if you decided you were going to go down that road with him, well, you know, he wouldn't have been one for turning on with regards to Dunphy. No chance, you know, no chance. We weren't bothered really by what Eamon said. It had very little impact on any of us. I would have always been more concerned what Gilesy was saying. You know, I would have been more concerned on what John was saying. And John was always pretty fair. John didn't like what he saw, but John would also recognise the reasons for doing it. Whereas, you know, Eamon kind of sensationalised it a little bit. But it never really got under any of our skin. Certainly didn't get under mine.
And why would you be more concerned about John Giles, I'd say? What would you take on board?
Oh, purely as a top player, Dion. Mm. As a top player. Yeah. You know, I'm not being disrespectful to Eamon there, but Giles, he was a top player. And so if he'd have said something, it would have resonated a little bit more. And he was critical at times, but he was critical, I think, when it was perhaps a little bit more justified. And again, having played in a lot of those big situations himself, he would have, I think, understood a little bit more sometimes about the need for getting results. Sometimes you've got to get your results, and it's not always about how you get there and how you play. You know, you want to get over the line.
We mentioned that some of the tactics used are kind of coming back in vogue again now. I think one thing that's probably not used so much by managers these days is the thousands and thousands of handwritten notes that Jack made. Yeah. When the production team came across those, that must have been like finding treasure. There's so many amazing things in there.
Do you know, I'd never seen him. I mean, Jack's notes were... He like famously come into the dressing room once, and he's got pulled a cigarette packet out of his pocket, and he's reading notes what he wrote down. Like, right, Baresi does this, and Maldini, does that, and, you know, on the back of a cigarette packet. You know, we used to laugh. So to see this kind of dossier of these handwritten notes, what did make me laugh though, and didn't surprise me, was it wasn't a kind of leather bound A4 perfect crisp pieces of white paper. It was bus tickets and scrappy bits of envelope and half a bit of paper here and a bit of paper there, all scattered about, you know. But I was fascinated, Matt, when I saw them for the first time, and that he kept them all, you know. Now, managers, you often see, you when you watch a football nowadays, you'll see Mourinho or you'll see Brendan Rodgers. Those two, perhaps more than most, they have a little pad and they're jotting a few things down. Now, Jack never did that. But I was still very, very intrigued at the amount of this stuff that he had written down on players, on situations. Some of it were buzzwords and like the be a dictator but be a nice one. Some of it was kind of like that. But then there would be little notes and free kicks and set plays. Now, I was genuinely quite shocked at that. And I was surprised at that. And when the guys decided to use that as a kind of core piece of the film, I thought that was fantastic.
It's one of the poignant things in the film too, because I remember Jack, an interview with Jack at that time when he said he remembered everything. Whenever he watched a game, he remembered everything about the game. But then his son John says, you know, one of the tragedies of the dementia was that when he watches football, he couldn't tell you anything about the game at all. What it robs from somebody is very clear in the film.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I witnessed that with my own father. I lost my own dad a couple of months ago. That's the thing with dementia, you know, you become unrecognizable from the person that you once was, and that's the real sad part of it. Jack was kind of such an indomitable figure when he was at his peak. He was, as I say, he was such a force, really, of nature in many ways. And then when you see parts of the film when, you know, it's in his last few months of his life, you can see what that illness does to people and how it affects people. It really does, I think, hit home exactly that kind of now is the time to be really taking on board everything that's being said about dementia and kind of starting to really put wheels in motion to understand it so much better in the future.
Yeah, it's a really big thing in football at the moment, isn't it? We're nearly out of time, Andy. I wanted, before we let you go there, just to ask you what you think Jack Charlton's legacy is, specifically in terms of the Ireland team.
Well, I think with the Ireland team, I always think that... If you believe in something, I think if you genuinely believe that you can you can achieve something, that you can be competitive. I think it is amazing that when you have someone behind you that genuinely does mean it when they say they believe you can be successful, I think it's amazing what you can go on to actually do yourselves. And so for me, I think he made the country believe. He made everybody believe that his players, if they applied it his way, you never know. He never ever once professed and turned around to tell anybody that we were going to win the World Cup or we were going to win the European Championships, never. But I do think that I think Jack's legacy is that he made everybody believe that we could be very competitive and that you never know. You never know what you might be able to do.
I hope that the people of Ireland have got, I know that they've got the memories. I know they cherish them and I know that they've enjoyed the days that when they've done something that they've never done before.
Listen, you know, we had some amazing days. We had some amazing times. And really, you know, we had a lot of good players, but you have to say a lot of it is down to the man at the top. You know, you are what you are on that field as a consequence of what your manager believes you can do. And I genuinely feel that Jack always believed we could be a serious team, a team to be feared, a team to be recognised. And all of a sudden, an Ireland team that was talked about. And we were most certainly that. So I think he gave the country reason to believe that we could be a serious football team. And we were.
The film is called Finding Jack Charlton. It's a beautiful piece of work. You can pre-order it now ahead of its release, available on the likes of Amazon, Apple TV, from HMV, from Sky Store, and plenty more beside. Andy, thanks so much for talking us through it and all the best with it.
Thank you, Matt. Cheers, Dion.
Cheers, Andy. Thanks, Matt.
Well, that'll wrap up this special edition of Totally. Thanks for your company, listener. We'll catch up with you again soon.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.